Well, I think we'll get a few more folks in after as they move in from lunch, but we'll get started. So we're resuming a session that had begun this morning in the A10 Provisional Division on looking at biomass production. And this particular session is on residue removal and soil quality, and we're looking towards information from long-term plots, long-term experiments to try to look at this issue of what is the effect of residue removal or organic matter differences on soil quality. Our next speaker this afternoon is Dr. Randy Miles. Randy is the director of the Sanborn Field of Experimental Plots at the University of Missouri, and he's going to talk to us about soil organic matter in the Sanborn Field.
Thank you. I want to thank Russ and his committee for getting this group together because it's been very stimulating what we've had so far, and I think the further discussion we will have. A better title for this, the first title I gave, organic matter, but we want to concentrate on carbon, so implications for long-term carbon levels and soil quality. Sanborn Field was established essentially 120 years ago. If I ever get harvest this fall, we will have completed our 120th year. It was established in the fall of 1888 to provide with the establishment of winter wheat then. And so this gives an overview of the field itself. There are 39 original plots, as well as then six others have been added since, and then one that has been taken away, but it gives you an idea of the size and the scope. And I picked out a picture, since we're talking about cereal grains there, one of our cereal grain years. Just to give a little background, just like Emerson did for the Morrill plots, we were established in 1888 by Dean Sanborn. And it was established and known first as the rotation field, because one of the major concerns at that time was after initial settlement and cultivation of the lands of central Missouri, yields were going down. And so it was thought that perhaps rotations, as well as the benefits of utilizing manure back into the soil landscape, was very critical in at least maintaining yields, if not increasing them. So I've just excerpted a little bit of Dean Sanborn's objectives on this then, that this was called the rotation series. And in fact, if you look at the original plot books and such, it was probably only going to have a longevity initially of 3 to 4 years. But the rotation series in 1888 was designed to show the value of various rotations, constant tillage of crops, non-tillage crops, to soil fertility of chemicals, according to crop analysis, to the necessity of rotation of the various crops unmanured, and to soil fertility, and it goes on and on from there. The present-day objectives are a little more broad than that. We cover more things, but we're trying to take a look at soil changes, as well as crop response and nutrient balance to selected crop sequences. We want to identify many environmental effects, then measure soil changes and crop responses, then since 1888. As well as demonstrate quite a few different interactions, and we also use it as a living teaching laboratory also. This is a layout, a plan view of the field itself. We have various, as you'll see in one of the next slides, various rotations and monocultures in this, and again there were 39 original plots, and six have been added since. In the lower right-hand corner, we find some that were added since. And you'll find out that we have lost a plot due to urban sprawl when a street was put in, because this was originally out in the middle of nowhere, or out in the middle of the country. To give a background here, I wish I'd have talked with Emerson beforehand. I'd have kept my English units here, but because I'll probably get a little tongue-tied. But our plots here are approximately 30 feet long and a little less than 9 meters or 10 meters wide, with at least a meter and a half of grass in between. The other thing, just like Emerson was talking about the moral plots, is the fact that each treatment is not replicated. And I always point out, as my predecessor Jim Brown, is the fact that this was laid out before Fisher statistics. And so we consider our years of nearly 120 to be our replication in many ways. And that may drive some people nuts, but we can't change history. I'm not a revisionist. The cropping systems, as you can see, we have various monocultures of corn, soybeans, one soybean, wheat, tall fescue, as well as timothy. And then we have some 3 and 4 year rotations, where in a lot of the rotations you can see we have wheat and red clover in there, in some cases for hay, in some cases just as a green manure crop then. Those plots that are highlighted in blue in some way, shape, or form I'll be covering or portraying in this presentation. I won't be able to portray everything, but at least give some of the trends. A little bit of the historic background on Sanborn Field, or at least from the management, because I know this came up in one of the earlier presentations. We do mowboard plow everything, and then disc harrow perhaps 2 or 3 times, or in some years 3 and 4, as it goes, as conditions present themselves. Weed management, we're not as sophisticated as Illinois on things. We still spread manure almost by hand, but we do a lot of weeding by old-fashioned cultivator and hand hoeing, and many of the historic plots have not had herbicides applied to them, and we think that's a value from the long term then. To give you an idea how Sanborn Field came into being and how it has evolved, I think we have to take a little bit of a look at the key human events that have happened there. Is that it started out in 1888, we had primarily animal power, and agriculture was animal-based. So when you take a look at some of the rotations, etc., I'm going to talk about, it has a flavor back to this history. Undoubtedly, hybrids have changed. With the Second World War, we had fertilizer and energy as a new nuance there. Of course, the energy crunch in recent times, and subsequently environmental awareness. Some other things to highlight on that is, over the years, there were quite a few initial manured plots. Now then, that has been decreased some over the years. We still have quite a few that have had manure, or still get manure. Again, nitrogen, we talked about that earlier in the session. That has been a greater input over the latter half of the history of Sanborn Field. Again, corn hybrids, and we could also put in there a lot of the varieties we have with the cereal grains now. Many of you may know that oreomycin was isolated on plot 23. And the other thing that really hammers things home for this particular session is that originally the residues on Sanborn Field were removed because it was to simulate animal agriculture, and that's why I covered that earlier, is it was to simulate what was being harvested and ingested removed by animals. And so in 1950 was the first year that essentially residues were kept or returned back into the soil from there. And that has come forward in one of the other modeling papers earlier. So just a brief history again, because we have oreomycin that has been isolated there, and again it went on and on, and it name changed from the rotation field to Sanborn Field then, named after Dean Sanborn in 24. Then again in 1950 we had a major change as far as the utilization of soil testing, as well as residues then being put back into the soil or to the plots from there. And of course in 65, a National Historic Landmark. Well, as we get down to a lot of the data and the reason why we're here to discuss and chew on this is we need to also keep in mind the soil resources of Sanborn Field. And as we talked at the before lunch here, some of us, is that our soil resource is not a uniform commodity out there, but most of the soil on Sanborn Field is the Mexico soil series, which is a fine smectitic mesic vertic eric albicoff, which means it's wet or dry and not a lot of times in between. In that sense, it's formed primarily from loess with perhaps some pedisediment, lower part of the profile, some influence by pre-Illinoisan till, and then it is a clay pan soil, so it has an abrupt textural change as you go down the profile. Now, as far as a background for this presentation to kind of put things forward here, is we do not have soil samples from the initiation of Sanborn Field in the fall of 1888. Essentially what we do have, the earliest samples come from 1915, and a lot of those are in the form of a soil profile of a hand probe, and so we will have these. You'll see a lot of the data I present will be with depth from there. Additionally, we have other cores or probes there that have been taken by depth in 1938, 62, and 63. The records on that, I think part were taken in 62, part in 63. Then 1988 data, which marked the centennial celebration, we took hydraulic cores from there. So we are able to analyze the soil down to at least a meter in many cases. We do have quite a series of surface soil samples that have been taken for soil testing purposes over the years and or special studies then from there. Again, I want to emphasize as a background, the treatments are not replicated because that's just the way it is. We have earliest samples from 1915 that I'm going to talk about there, and then that the residues were started and returned back in 50. So for this presentation, I'm going to portray the first bullet there would be some of our monocultures of wheat, corn, and timothy with various treatments of fertility, manure there, and we talked about manure earlier then. A corn, wheat, red clover rotation, some with manure, some full fertility, some no fertility, full fertility without nitrogen. Much of that goes back originally, but some of it was also blended in some other plots in 1950 when we had the major revision. And then a corn, soybean, wheat with then red clover established as a green manure in the wheat with frost seeding, as was talked about earlier. So this will give you an idea of the field, just a couple on the ground shots as we launch into some of the data. This would be a continuous timothy plot that has had nothing added to it all along, no lime, no fertilizer, no manure. And that's where we had the isolation of source for oreomycin. This gives you another shot in the background. It would be continuous corn on the left where nothing has been added. And contrary to what some of the modern people that visit this, that's not our miniature corn breeding program. The one on the right, the corn plot happens to be what would be equivalent, and I am going to speak English terms here, 6 tons of barnyard manure per acre. The two plots in the foreground that have been plowed on the left, again, would be a continuous wheat that has not had anything added over the years, and continuous wheat on the right with 6 tons of barnyard manure from there. So I'm going to start out and present some of the data, and I'm not going to present for every monoculture or every aspect of the rotation, but try to present some of the trends that we see. And there are some very striking trends that are fairly universal here in that perspective, that when we take a look at the continuous wheat, with full fertility. And as I look at the lines here, the colors don't show up as well on the screen there, but we have these with depth distribution for 1915, 38, 62 or 63, and then 88. And what we find here is that organic carbon levels tend to decrease from 1915 to 38, and they still decrease not only at the surface, but in some cases slightly in the upper part of the subsoil with depth, even through 63, and that was 62 or 63, which would be at least 12 or 13 years after initiation of the residues being returned there. And so there is a time lag. But once we get to 1988, then our levels of organic carbon start to come back where they are almost at the levels what they were in 1915. Now, the differences here may just be 2 or 3 tenths of a percentage by weight of carbon, but yet over a large area, that could be quite a bit. I'm just showing the continuous wheat plot here that has had nothing added to it, and what we do find is a typical draining of the carbon, even using 1915 as a reference, and that's been quite a few years after initiation, but we do find it decreasing, and again, we will find some decrease in slight in the subsoil. Going to the continuous corn where we have manure, we have pretty good ability there to maintain and or build up manure, build up carbon then, and we find that in the continuous wheat as well as you'll see here in continuous Timothy. And since from the 63 to the 88, we do start to see some increases in carbon. Again, it may be just a tenth of a percent, and I would attribute part of that, as we talked earlier before the break there, is the fact that we are now using manure that comes from confinement operations, and there's more nitrogen there, and that may be greater conversion of materials coming in. Continuous Timothy, with no additions, we hold our own there over time from 1915 through 1988. In that sense, and then we do hold our own, and in fact increase in carbon content at the surface and slightly in the upper part of the subsoil with manuring from 1915 through again 88. We do see this increase there. Now, going to the corn, wheat, red clover, a couple depth distributions again where we see manure, we will see that we do have some differences up near the surface then, and in due time we do come back from lowering since 1915 again as our reference, and we do drop back a little bit, but then our 88 samples and some of our more recent samples near the surface, we are increasing there. Where we have no fertility coming in there, we do have quite a hodgepodge over the time there. And one of the things you will find with the no fertility, we find greater fluxes in the subsoil, or at least the upper part of the subsoil. And I want to just make a plea that as we start taking a look at carbon sequestration, I really think we need to look at part of the subsoil, because that can be the more stable part, even though that graph doesn't show it. But if we're going to notch in some carbon and sequester it, I think that is where the action is probably going to occur. In this corn, wheat, red clover one, this happens to be the one that was phased in 1950, we have three plots that would be our most likely replication of full fertility. And what we find there is that, again, we had some decreases earlier in the life cycle, and now then we're increasing up, but even in some cases we're not quite getting to the 1915 levels that we serve as our reference. The corn, wheat, red clover, where we have the green manure then, so we're have interseeded the green manure, we find much the same thing going on there with the full fertility. When we start getting into the full fertility, where we do not add K but everything else up to soil test, we start to decrease a little bit in carbon from there. Now, and as we go along in recent times, one of the things I wanted to show here, I gave the profile distribution first because, again, that's going to be the sponge, so to speak, and the piggy bank where we can store the carbon there, at least the whole piggy bank. I now want to take a look at the surface, and for Sandburn Field, we do a little bit different sampling at the surface. Because we mowboard plow and then disc with a harrow, we sample at 0 to 4 and 4 to 8 inch depth. So we plow to about 8 inches and then we secondary tillage to 4. And so we do take separate samples there just to see. And one of the things you'll find with full fertility, as you see there on the left, and then I've added some of our recent 2008 soil test sampling, we have been getting, general, an increase since 1950 in the surface there. Same thing with the manure plus the nitrogen. That's 40 pounds of nitrogen per acre there. We have until recently there, and that may be because the manure is not as carbonaceous as in the past. Same thing here in the continuous wheat with the no additions. You can see we have a general trend downward, and we talked earlier today about all the anomalies we may find, but with no additions of anything in the continuous wheat, we do have a trend going down. And again, with manure, we had a trend going up after 1950, but in recent times going down, and again, that may be due to just the lack of carbon being applied in the manure itself. Continuous corn, the same thing, no additions, although we do have, in recent times, we're starting to see a little bit of increase in carbon there, and quite frankly, I cannot explain that. Manure, again, we were increasing, but now then we're going down again since 88, and perhaps, again, lack of carbon input in the manure itself. Timothy, we have been getting increases since 1950 when we started putting residues on again until recently in the manure. And again, I think the manure aspect, we need to take a look at what our organic amendments are as we look at some of these, if that's part of our cropping systems from there. In the corn, wheat, red clover, again, you can see the same thing with the manure going down and the full fertility. Again, it's one that I can't explain, but the last couple soil tests, we have gone down in organic carbon. As we go a little further here, the no fertility, for some reason, we have maintained or increasing a little bit, and I think we're probably close to somewhat of an equilibrium level there. And again, full fertility without the nitrogen, then you can see we are starting to get some leveling off there and perhaps a little bit of decrease. Where we have the corn, soybean, wheat rotation with the green manure, the full fertility, we're somewhat stable to slightly decreasing. Where we have the minus K, again, kind of the same thing on that. And we somewhat have been level with full fertility without the phosphorus. But again, in recent soil testing, we seem to be going down some in the carbon area. If I had to summarize some of the long-term soil organic carbon levels on Sandburn Field with the monocultures, again, what we had noticed since 1915 that we were seeing a decrease in soil organic matter or carbon levels through the 62-63 analysis. But then after that, when we 25 years later, when we had the cores there, again we had started to see some increases in the surface as well as the upper subsoil. We see that we're coming back maybe close to what was originally there in the 1915 samples. And in some cases, we may find that we do not always return to those levels. Again, as rotations, we have many of the same generalizations we can say there. With that, the exception would be the manures. We tend to come back there, but again, with the change in manure over the years, we do find some differences. Now, I tried to do some computations based upon what we were losing or what we were gaining in some of these time frames to give an idea. And again, what I put up here is in the upper 20 centimeters, which would be eight inches because of our unique sampling characteristics. And there's no doubt we lost a lot from 1915 through the 63 sample analysis period. Continuous wheat, we had losses up to 13.2 milligrams per hectare. Continuous corn was a little lower, is a little more consistent. The Timothy gain there, being grass crop and the little bit different management, that could be understandable. The corn, wheat, red clover really had no losses to losses up to a little over 13 megagrams from there. And then again, the rotation had some gains from 63 on then. The corn, soybean, wheat, red clover as a green manure, we had fairly consistent losses of perhaps 5 to 6 there in that sense, and then stable levels from there, as well as slight gains then. Again, what I want to end up with here, that we used 1915 as our reference samples because we had nothing else to go back to. Undoubtedly, organic carbon levels had gone down from what we initially had on Sanborn Field, but we had nothing else to reference there. Once the residues were returned, there was a time lag of bringing that up. And granted, we had a very coarse type of sampling system, but if you go back and look at some of our soil test values in the surface soils, you would see some of the same general trend from there. Then the gains and losses in depths lower than 20 centimeters, of course, were slight and possess a greater lag time. But again, I think that may be the area that we need to look at if we're really going to look at sequestering carbon from there. I'll just end quickly on one other one since we're talking about soil quality. We've been doing a little bit of active carbon work with the National Soil Survey Characterization Lab trying to assess or measure, and I use that term in parenthesis, active carbon, and with a field kit. There was a presentation earlier today. It's good to tell you now on that, but if you saw that, some of our data was in there. And basically what we're looking at here and what I've presented on some of our monocultures and such, we're looking at this over time because, you know, carbon is carbon, but there's some carbon that's special carbon or the more active. And that may be one area we need to look at. And this is just a preliminary, and so I just want to share it with you in the fact that if you take a look at the sampling dates of surface soils there from 3 of 08 through 6 of 09 here, you will see the measurement that I have there, like 200 milligrams per kilogram. I'm not so sure we know what is a good value, but the point is the higher the number, the more active carbon we have. The percent carbon by induction furnace is given in parenthesis to also let you know what the actual carbon content was from there. Undoubtedly, those manured plots had larger concentrations of active carbon. Those that had fresher inputs there also had greater quantities of active carbon. So there was a relationship to the organic carbon content, but also, again, not all organic carbon's the same from that. We take a look also some of this with the corn, soybean, wheat, with, again, the red clover with the wheat, in the third year is the green manure. Again, we find some of these with that. You'll see some big differences there. And the one that really stands out is the no fertility there in 3 of 08, where we had a fairly large number, but it progressively goes down from there. So just as we have with carbon and organic matter, I think we're going to see some fluxes there. But what we can say then, we do find some differences there. Treatments and the type and amount of biomass undoubtedly and the freshness of it contributed to that. There's true seasonal fluxes. We need to do more calibration from there. And finally, I'll just end up with what one of our former superintendents of Sandburn Field, many of you may have known of Dr. Woodruff of the Woodruff Buffer, talks about some of the lessons learned on Sandburn Field, and I think it really puts things for this session in perspective. Aside from the information gained pertaining to crops, the values of plots today and in the future lies in the assessment of the slow changes brought about in the soil, the whole profile, by crops, management, and treatments imposed upon them. These slow changes, minute as they are from one year to another, are not measurable except over a period of years long enough to accumulate differences great enough to assess current techniques. And I can't say that any better, particularly when you have a field that you're not replicated. But I also want to thank a lot of my predecessors and people that I've worked with that have helped with this data and such. Some of you may know them, and I know I've probably taken my time, but hopefully it's given you some food for thought on some of the trends. Any questions? Okay.
Thank you.